Hello, everyone. This is Forrest. I am the president of the PPD TMS Peer Network. That is the 501c3 nonprofit that backs projects like the TMS Wiki and the Thank You, Dr. Sarno project. And today we have a very special event planned. It is a part of our regular Tuesday night call-in discussion group, peer discussion group, where we often cover books. The facilitator of that discussion group is my good friend Eric Herbie Watson. He is actually an author himself. He is writing a book connecting TMS healing and religion, and he is a splendid facilitator for this group. Absolutely wonderful on our forums as well. Very helpful. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn the microphone over to him, and he is going to introduce our guest. Take it away, Herbie.
Yeah, thank you, Forrest. Okay, it's exciting tonight. I mean, we got Stephen Canina on here. He's a civil engineer. He was a Dr. Sarno patient and a Dr. Eric Sherman patient. He's done a lot. He's going to speak about it. It's going to be great. Steve was a member of Dr. Sarno's alumni panels. I want to say that. Okay, and Steve wasn't, you know, just a doctor that learned about this. Steve was a patient and went through this for 15 years. So he's got a huge story to tell about. And I do want to mention the name of his book that he just wrote in 2013. It's Use Your Mind to Heal Your Body. And it just came out in 2013. And I think you can get that at Amazon, right, Steve?
Amazon. That's right.
Probably anywhere. Okay. And before we start, I do need to let everyone know that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. If you have a medical concern, you should see a properly licensed physician, or as we like saying, a TMS physician. Now, with that being said, Steve, we're all really interested in, one of the things we're all really interested in is the way you would get up and speak at the alumni panel when you would, tell the story to all the people that Dr. Sarno or Mr. Sherman had you helping. Would you want to take over there?
Sure. And thanks.
Okay, thanks, Eric. Thank you. Thank you,
sure,
man.
Thank you. It's just a real, first of all, thank you, Eric, and thank you, Forrest. Wow, it's a real privilege and an honor to be here with you and talking to everybody in this community. I've been around the TMS Wiki and reading all the information that's on it, and there's such a beautiful wealth of information from patients and doctors and people who've written books and psychotherapists and just hundreds and hundreds of people that are suffering and want to get better and just sharing information with each other. So I wish I had such a beautiful resource when I was going through this about 15 years ago. And so I'll be happy to tell everybody my story. The way we did it in the alumni panel is that, each of us would tell our story in just a few minutes, you know, not too long, just the basics of what we went through and kind of what we did to get better. And then we opened it up to a conversation, an interactive dialogue with people. And if it works for you, Eric and Forrest, I'd like to try it that way. That way I don't, you know, speak for too long and put people to sleep with my story.
Okay, but that's certainly you could do that. I do find that with these online recordings, people do like the chance to get to know the person pretty well. So I would encourage you to take as long as you want. But... you know, it's, we'll play it by ear.
Okay. All right. So, let's see. I was, a civil engineer working, studying, civil engineering at Columbia University when I first started to experience back pain. I was in my 20s, and, I remember, walking across the college campus and just occasionally having these, you know, sharp pains that would shoot up my leg. And so much so that it was just like, it felt like somebody had thrown a spear at me and it went right down my leg. So I would be stopped dead in my tracks. And, you know, from time to time I would just, you know, stop, catch my breath, and then keep walking. And it would, and I'd start, you know, as if nothing really happened. And then, you know, over the years, sometimes I would have these attacks that would seem to come out of the blue, and I would be bedridden. You know, I wouldn't, literally would not be able to get out of bed, and it wasn't that I didn't want to get out of bed. I couldn't. I mean, I just couldn't bend in my middle section. The pain was so excruciating. But again, it would, a few days after being in bed, the pain would disappear, and it would be like I never had it at all. And at the time, I was extremely fit and, you know, flexible and, you know, in good shape. And so that's how I would have episodes like that between my 20s and my 30s. You know, let's see, you know, I eventually graduated from Columbia and had several jobs working in the world of engineering and construction. And at a certain point, I decided to start my own company. I decided to start an engineering, consulting, and construction company. And so, you know, it was mostly me doing a lot of everything. Getting the business and then, you know, running the projects and then even from time to time working alongside the men on the projects. And on one particular occasion, I remember, you know, operating a jackhammer, breaking concrete and loading a dumpster with broken pieces of concrete. And at one point, as I was prying a piece of concrete off the ground with the blade of the jackhammer, I heard a pop in my back. And I felt this that same burning sensation go down my leg that would hit me from time to time. And so I said, oh, God, what bad timing for something like this, you know, with the company and running the company and trying to pay my bills and finishing projects. But there's no, wasn't any choice about it, you know, it was, you know, back to bed, and I was just going to wait it out for the pain to eventually go away. Except this time, it didn't. You know, days and days later, the pain wouldn't go away. It went away barely enough for me to be able to get out of bed and, you know, walk around. But what I was left with was this limp. You know, I was limping along. You know, I couldn't walk straight. There was a slight haunch or bend in my back. I was bent over a little and had this sharp pain whenever I would step on my left leg. And if you took off my shirt and looked at my spine from the back, you'd see that the muscles along the left part of my lower back were pulling my spine so much to the side that instead of my spine looking like a straight line up and down, it would be pulled over to the side. It looked like an S. And they call that a listed spine in the medical community now. But I didn't know it at the time. So, you know, what did I do? I did what anybody would do. I, you know, went to see a back doctor. You know, what do you call those guys? The neurologist and... what's the official name for that? Somebody help me with that.
Orthopedist, physiatrist.
An orthopedist, yes, an orthopedist. Yeah. And they gave me, you know, prescription medication and prescribed physical therapy. And none of that got me better. I then tried... what everybody else tries is going to see a chiropractor. And, you know, went to several sessions, of very painful sessions, being in a chiropractor. They stretched me and cracked my back. Sometimes I would have, you know, seconds of relief, but as soon as I, you know, got back to normal activities like driving or walking or sitting or even sleeping, the back pain would return. So then I tried chiropractors, I tried different physical therapists. I remember going to this one particular physical therapy lab. They had so many devices in there, electric shock and warmth and heat, and they had this one machine that they put me on that I laid down on it, and they strapped my legs to one end of the machine, and they strapped my head and shoulders to the other part of the machine, and it literally pulled me apart like a rack. It was torture. And none of it was able to get rid of the pain. I remember trying shiatsu massages. I even bought an inversion machine, so that I could hang upside down. I thought that, to my engineering mind, I thought that if I could, hang upside down, then that would alleviate the compression between my discs, between my vertebrae, and allow the disc not to be so squished, and then it maybe wouldn't impinge upon my sciatic nerve. And that would work pretty great as long as I was hanging upside down, but then when I got back on my feet, it was torture again. So it's easy to laugh about these things now, but at the time, I was getting more and more desperate. And the people in my life, my parents, my sisters, my friends, were very concerned because I had gone from this athletic, in shape, person to, just being bent over and limping like an old man. And they pleaded with me to just do something more, effective, or do something to get rid of the pain. So, I went to a back surgeon, and heard a lot about back surgery. So I went to see a back surgeon, and they took MRIs and X-rays. And at this point, they had they saw herniated discs at L4, L5, L5, S1, and they showed the images to me, and I could see, in the cross sections. It was reading these MRIs was a lot like reading blueprints. As an engineer, I was able to do that, and I knew what I was kind of knew what I had a look at it, and I could see the bulge in the disc, and I could see how it was sticking out and protruding. And boy, I was like, that must definitely be the source of the pain. And so I pleaded with them to try to avoid the surgery. But they said that, so actually what they came up with at the time was steroid injections. So they said, why don't we try oral steroids, and if that doesn't work, we'll try steroid injections. And so I went for a pack of oral steroids that were administered over several weeks. I don't remember how long that was. It did absolutely nothing. And then I went for my first steroid shot into my lower back. So they wheeled me into an operating room, full gown, just as if you're going into surgery, under these bright lights, and I would be face down, and they would pull out this huge needle, and I remember getting my first cortisone injection. And once I got off the table and, woke up from whatever, time, the pain was gone, and I couldn't believe it. It was the most amazing, incredible relief that I had felt by this time in months and close to a year. and I was in heaven. I thought I was cured. And it was just a few weeks. I remember running around my block where I lived, just my hands up in the air. I felt like Rocky, you know. I was like, I'm healed, I'm healed. I can run. I've got my life back. And it was just a few weeks later, it just started to creep in again. And I held off for as long as I could. And before you know it, I was back where I started. And I went for my second shot. You know, I thought maybe if I get two shots, that'll knock it out and maybe knock out the pain for good. Needless to say, it didn't work. This time the release period was even shorter. I ended up going for six shots, six injections. At each time, the release period lasted shorter and shorter. And, you know, by this time I was pretty desperate and I was really feeling like maybe I've got no hope. Maybe I'm just going to have to go under the knife. Now, this troubled me a little bit because, you know, I'd spoken to a lot of people that had surgery. I'd spoken to a lot of people in physical therapy clinics. You know, I'd been to a lot of physical therapy clinics by this time. I'd been to a lot of chiropractors. I'd spoken to a lot of people that had back surgery. And some of them got better. Some of them didn't get better. Some of them got worse. You know, I remember speaking to people in physical therapy rehab centers, and I'd say, you know, so what are you in for? And, you know, back pain, yeah, me too. I'm trying to avoid surgery. Are you? And they were like, no, I had the surgery. I'm now trying to get better. I'm now trying to get relief from scar tissue. I'm like, what? What happened to those 90, you know, 5% success rates that all the surgeons were talking about? You know, start to wonder, how do they measure success? You know, and now I just want to be clear at this point. I have nothing against back surgeons or doctors or the whole medical community. I'm sure, not I'm sure, I know for a fact that, boy, you know, if I break a bone, I want to see a doctor. And if I break a bone in my back, I want to see a back doctor. And I want to be really clear. I don't think that there's any bad intentions among surgeons, back surgeons. But I don't think they know what a lot of us on this call know or have been exposed to, and certainly not what Dr. Sarno opened up. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself in the story here. So anyway, so here I am. I'm reached the end of my rope as far as, you know, trying all these different modalities, even what's acupuncturist, where they put electricity through the needles. I mean, I tried a lot of different things. And I remembered, see, as an engineer, I've been trained to try to resolve things using my mind and my intelligence. And I had done a lot of research on this. I'd gone to medical school libraries, and the more I read and the more I learned, the more I bought into the physical diagnosis. I could draw for you know, a spine and this and the different areas of the spine and the lumbar area, the cervical area, and the, you know, and all those thoracic areas, and, you know, and the discs and the intervertebral spaces, and, you know, how it compresses against the sciatic nerve. And the more I understood this, the more I bought into this physical diagnosis. I read almost every book at bookstores, and at this point, where I was this close to having surgery, I remembered a tiny little book called Mind Over Back Pain. that I read early on in my research. And I remember this, it was, first of all, it was smaller than all the other books, it was shorter than the other books, but it had this shocking message, stunning message. It said something about emotions and pain and psychosomatic. And I said, now, see, I browsed through the book. I want to be really clear. I didn't read the book. I browsed through this book by Dr. Sarno. It was Dr. Sarno's first book. I browsed through it, and I thought to myself, this is nonsense. This is crazy. My pain is real. I can't hardly walk. Can't do anything that I used to be able to do. And here's this guy saying the pain's all in my head.
I remember that same feeling. This is Forrest. Yeah.
And I said, this is bull. And I got was angry and upset, and I threw the book down. And I said, the garbage people will buy these days. I can't believe this is a doctor who actually wrote this. And I remembered that was one of the first books I read. But this time I was desperate. And I remembered reading that book, and I said, I just said to myself right here as I was facing surgery, have I really uncovered every single option? I want to make sure I've tested out every option before I go under the knife. And for some reason, I had a flashback about that book. So I don't think I really fully explored that book. I didn't even remember the title of that book. Just knew it was some book about mind and back pain. And so I limped back over to a Barnes & Noble and I asked somebody about this, how can I find this book? That book wasn't there anymore. There was, by this time, there was a second edition or a second version of that book. It was Dr. Sarno's Healing Back Pain, the mind-body connection, was now out. And this time I read the book. I read the book. And I was startled by what I read. He was describing typical personalities of his patients. Of patience, and my personality jumped off the pages. I felt like he was talking directly to me about me, and I finally got his message. He was not, Dr. Sarno was not saying the pain is all in my head. He was saying the pain is real. It's one of the most powerful, painful, real symptoms known to medicine, back pain. It just grabs you in every waking moment and even during your sleep. But it's a symptom and not the disease. He was saying, the pain isn't all in my head. He didn't say that. He said, the source of the pain is in my head. And I couldn't believe it. I said, wow, that was a whole new way of looking at it. So the pain is real, but the source of the pain isn't physical. The source of the pain is my mind. And if I could localize the source of my pain in my mind, then maybe there's something that I could do about it. If the source of the pain isn't physical, then maybe there isn't a physical remedy to it. Maybe there's a psychological remedy to it. And I devoured that book. I highlighted almost every page. I underlined it in red and blue. I folded over pages. I did diagrams. I wrote notes to myself. I entered this whole new world of the mind. You see, for an engineer, it wasn't possible. It didn't seem possible or logical for there to be a connection or a relationship between my thoughts and emotions and my physical body. And my physical body is my physical body. My thoughts are and feelings are my thoughts and feelings, and there's no relationship. But in this book, for the first time in my life, I was introduced to this, a relationship between the world of thoughts and emotions and the body. And that there's a very particular, a very sharply defined relationships between the emotions and the pain. And let's see, I mean, you know, what I eventually learned is that the pain exists for one reason, and that is to distract your attention from what a part of your mind thinks are very harmful, shameful, or painful emotions. So the pain exists to distract your attention from these other emotions that it doesn't want you to face or feel. So you spend your life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, dealing with the pain and not confronting the emotions. And so this charade or this strategy of the mind perfectly executes its job, distracting you from these painful emotions. So where's the healing? The healing happens by looking at those emotions. And when you look at those emotions, the pain no longer serves a purpose and disappears. Miraculous. But I'm getting ahead of myself because as a stubborn, logical engineer, it made sense to me, but I was still in pain. And so I read the book. I read the book several times, and then I got up the nerve to actually, but since I was still in pain, I mean, at this time, before reading the book, I was popping pills, all kinds of prescription, non-prescription, Aleve, Tylenol, whatever I could get my hands on. I was buying them in the biggest containers. I would have them, you know, multiple pills at a time, several days at a time, several times a day. And when I read the book, and I thought I needed the pills to take the edge off my pain so that I could go on with my life. And I remember after I read the book, I stopped the pills, and I wasn't better, but I wasn't worse. So I really got that those pills weren't doing anything for me. And so I saw daylight at the end of the tunnel. I felt like this book was my way out, but there was still something that I just couldn't get. There was still a missing piece of the puzzle. I now knew about the connection between emotions and the pain, and I had this huge breakthrough that Dr. Sarna was not saying that the pain is imaginary, it's real, but there still was something that wasn't clicking for me. And so it seemed logical for me that, maybe I could find where maybe I can speak to this, maybe I could even see this doctor. And just, it was just so lucky. Because at the time, you know, Dr. Sarna was still practicing, and as luck and fate would have it, you know, I lived in New York. Dr. Sarna's office was in New York. And I said, oh my God, let me make an appointment, and, you know, maybe in a few months, I'll be able to see this miracle worker. So I called up, spoke with Mary, and she said, sure, Dr. Sarna, we'll see you next week. I'm like, that's incredible. What do you mean? How could it be so easy to see Dr. Sarna, you know? And what I would later learn is that, you know, only a very small percentage of people are open to this type of thinking and to this diagnosis, sadly. You know, and I have a lot of opinions about why that is, I'd be happy to share with people at some point, because I do want to leave some time for questions and answers. But I eventually got to see Dr. Sarno. It was an incredible encounter with this man, because he was absolutely, once he tested me and did this for examination, he was absolutely certain that I had PMS. And it was in his certainty that, I found confidence. I believed him. I trusted him. And now I would still have to go to work. I said, I want to get better fast. I want to do this. I've had enough. I know this is my way out. Let's do it. Yes, I have PMS. I'm willing to believe this. I'm willing, because he asks you at a certain point, are you willing to consider that there's a psychological cause for your pain? And I said, absolutely, because great. And I said, I want to handle this right away. What's the fastest way? Well, I went to do a seminar with him. It was like a 3-hour lecture, and then you wait like 60 days or something like that. And if the pain still doesn't get better, you go to see one of his therapists. And of course, stubborn, logical me, hard-headed, I was, and I had a reason for that, because the visual of the MRI and that physical diagnosis created a lot of doubt in my mind. I was still very skeptical, but there was something else that was going on. I was heavily guarded. That part of my mind was very heavily guarded against me, seeing some of the emotions that were there. That's really what was happening. And in any case, I entered into therapy with a psychotherapist that Dr. Sarno recommended. And it was one of the most beautiful times of my life, working with, Dr. Sarno just picked somebody for me, and he ended up picking the perfect therapist, a gentleman named Eric Sherman, who I owe my life to, along with Dr. Sarno. There's so much, many stories that I could tell about working with Eric and Dr. Sarno, and I would continue to go to these small group gatherings with Dr. Sarno. But to try to make a long story short, working with Eric, I felt a lot of emotional relief. The period of time that I worked with Eric was 1 year. And about midway through that 1 year, I was feeling so much emotional relief, as I explored this world of emotions, this non-linear, non-logical world of emotions. This was a new world for me. This new world where love and hate can coexist at the same time, where anger and rage and passion and sadness and, these feelings that I never was able to articulate or even feel before as this kind of logical engineer, opened up for me. But I still felt pain. And I thought to myself, what I really need, what I would really like is to, as much as I enjoy going to see Dr. Sarno in the small group lectures, as much as I'm getting from Eric and my psychotherapy, I think what I really need is to speak to somebody who's been through this process. I want to be able to meet somebody, to speak with somebody, to see somebody who's been through this process and popped out the other side pain-free. I want to meet that man or woman. And again, fate would have it. What I used to do was, after every session, psychotherapy session, I would go to a coffee shop, and write notes about my session and journal right there on the spot, because you know all these new parts of my psychology were, you know, I was able to, new thoughts, new places to think, new ways to think had become available to me. So I would, you know, journal after these sessions. And I would go to a coffee shop, and one day I was at this coffee shop with my healing back pain book, you know, that I kind of took with me, at little, you know, little yellow stickies all over it and tabs and bent pages. And this woman comes up to me and says, "Oh, you're reading back pain, healing back pain?" And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "Do you ever work with Dr. Sarno?" I said, "Yeah, I'm a patient of his." She goes, "Yeah, I was a patient of his too, 10 years ago." And she went on to tell me her story and how, you know, what she had done, what she had gone through. And I was riveted. Here I was in the presence of a woman who said she was once bedridden. And she told me about her relationship with her husband and what she had gone through. And I had finally met this person who, you know, went through the process and popped out the other side. And it was a turning point for me in my therapy. And I remember promising myself that once I got better, I would provide that for other people. And in the next few months, I ended up getting completely pain-free. There was something I saw around that time in therapy that clicked for me. And I think I'll leave that for questions and answers if people are interested. But I did get better. I ended up, you know, a couple of years after I was better for a couple of years, I remember going back to Dr. Sarno and saying, "You know what? I now want to give back. I want to do something for people that are still suffering." And I thought of this concept where people who would be pain-free could speak to his patients who are still under treatment. And although he was a little tentative at first, he saw the value in it and actually shared that he was thinking about something like that, some way of having people who are better share themselves or be a resource for people who are still suffering. And so we created these panel discussions, which he used to affectionately call alumni panels, because we were graduates. And it was the fulfillment of a dream come true for me. And what I really loved about it was that they were perpetual. In other words, people who were in the audience would eventually get better and become members of the panel. It was so rewarding. And I also heard many, 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 many stories and spoke to many, many patients along the way. I just have so much gratitude and compassion and appreciation for patients who are dealing with this disorder. And so, you know, after that, I wrote a book, and that brings us to today. So here I am. I wrote my story, and I wanted it to be available now that Dr. Sarno is retired and those panel discussions are no longer available. I thought, you know, I think it's important for somebody who's gotten better to share their story, because as valuable as Dr. Sarno's books are, they are from a doctor's perspective. And I wanted to, and I think they're not only valuable, they're indispensable, but I also wanted to provide something for people that is from a patient's perspective. You know, the doubts, the fears, the insecurities, the, you know, how you deal with the ups and the downs and, you know, different people and society and doctors and things like that. And so that's what I tried to address in my book, a real powerful personal story of and of how I use Dr. Sarno's methodology to get better. And my purpose of writing the book is just a single purpose, is so that people could get better faster by knowing and learning about what I went through. So that I talked for 45 minutes straight. I can't believe this.
Hey, that, gosh, man, you have really laid a lot of information out there. I know I'm going to be re-listening all of this while I'm doing my workouts during the daytime. So, Forrest asked me if if we should go ahead and interject any, and you did a great job, man. There was, I mean, for real, we'll be able to listen to this over and over and over, Steve. And we're not done. We still got questions now, you know?
Sure.
So I'm not going to open up with a question. I'm gonna leave it to some of the others. But I do got one question that I think everybody this would really help everybody here. And I'm going to ask it. I said I wasn't going to open up, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I got to, Steve. I think this will really help everybody that's on the phone, and then we'll open up to everybody else. But one of your chapters in your book, in part two, Steve, it basically it says it like this. How does it go? He says, "I'm doing everything Dr. Sarno says to do, but I still feel pain. What would you do?" And when I saw that, and I read your answer, and I loved it, and I thought that, because I hear it all the time at TMS Wiki, I mean, people's been doing it a long time, and they've been, 6, 7, 8 months in there, hanging in, doing the work, and they still got issues and stuff, and a lot of times they want to know what is it, what is it that I might not be doing that I need to be doing, and I think since that's one of the parts in your book there, that would be a great question to ask. So, what would you do, Steve?
That's great. Yeah, I think everybody, not everybody faces that, actually. A lot of people
About
read the book and
90% probably. Well, a
yeah,
lot of
probably,
people,
but they
yeah.
read, don't you hate those stories about people who you hear about, oh, I read the book and then all my pain went away.
Yeah, everybody on here hates them people. Oh, no, we love them. We love them. No, we really love them. I mean, we do got some people like that, but it's far and few in between, Steve, as you know.
Well,
And
right. And that is my wish for people. As much as I hate to, I wish that people would read my book and their pain would go away. I really, that's why I wrote the darn thing.
I wouldn't see why not. You do have an awesome book, and it really does tell the truth. And to me, this is all higher truth that people just don't comprehend. But anyway,
Let me go after that one. And I don't remember exactly how I wrote it in my book, but there's a couple of key points. When you're working the system and you're, doing the journaling and you're doing everything that Dr. Sarno says to do, and you're still not feeling the pain, basically, you're either not ranging far enough, not handling a subject matter or something that, you're either not covering all the ground, or you're not going deep enough. I know that's a hard way of saying, and I want to get this so in a way that people can really understand it, or people who listen to the tape, or people who are on the call.
You mentioned about your father and how you had to get deeper. Remember?
Yeah, sure.
There was something you just didn't want to face, and then when you finally
Yeah,
did it.
that's a really good way of doing it, Eric.
Yeah.
Let me do it by example.
Okay.
As See, in therapy, I learned that I had a lot of rage towards my father. I had a lot of anger, and it wasn't only anger and upset. There was rage there. Okay. So once, before therapy, I knew I was upset. I knew I didn't like to be around the room with him. I knew that, you know, I complained a lot about my dad. If anybody will listen, they'd eventually hear a lot about, you know, my difficult relationship with my father, anybody who was willing to listen to me. In therapy, I learned, oh, wow, it's not just difficult. I have a lot of anger and rage, and, you know, there's some real upset here. Okay, good. That still won't get you better. That still leaves you exactly in the place where, hey, I'm doing all the work. I'm even going to see a therapist, you know, and I'm not getting better. So that's right, dead on, right in that, you know, right in that fork in the road. And here's what I got. It wasn't, see, that's just the first half, and it's an important half. Like in the book, I call it the aha moment.
Yeah.
That's the ah. That's the ah. Ah. Aha. Two parts. Ah. Oh, ah. I have all this anger and rage that I didn't know was there. Important to get. Oh, I hate, you know, I have upset towards, you know, not in my case, maybe other people, I have upset with my children, or I, you know, I've been upset with a dear friend, or like that. Oh, there's upset there. Okay, got it. But that's still not going to get you better. What the conflict was, that I felt that I shouldn't have those emotions. I felt that it was
That's
wrong,
good.
And it was bad for me to have those emotions.
That's good. We
That's
we rarely,
the second part.
Yeah, we rarely hear that part that you just mentioned there.
That's the critical part. Without that part, and that's the part that we don't want to face. That's the part that, you know, you got to be able to, and, you know, that's the kind of, you know, and I hate to use this word because it's going to get, I don't want to get confusing, and I don't want to turn this into philosophy, but it's, we got to have compassion and forgive ourselves for having those emotions.
Right.
It's human to have those emotions. In fact, it'd be weird if I didn't have those emotions. So that's the relief that eventually happens, and that you eventually need to face in order to overcome psychosomatic pain.
Awesome.
Derek, was that clear? Did you think that got across? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's real good. You know, I've had to do dream work and all kinds of things to be able to come up with that, what you just said there. And that was one of the last things that I learned that helped me get well, was understanding that even though I thought I had all bases covered, I still had anger issues that I hadn't faced. I still had stuff that I hadn't came to compromise with, you know, or just how do you say it? Well, basically, you laid it out. You said it, so I'm not going to try to rephrase it in any word.
Well, and also tell me if I'm right here, Steve, but it sounds like it's not just enough to know that you have emotions. You have to accept those emotions and know that it's okay to have those emotions. Did I get that right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And it's not just accept like, oh, I'm deficient because I have them. I accept that I'm flawed. I accept that there's something wrong with me. No, there's something right with you. There's something human.
Yeah.
It's not just resigned about having these emotions. I'm resigned. No, it's, well, I have a left hand, I have a right hand, and I have anger towards my father.
Right,
like that.
Right.
Like it comes with the machinery of being a human being.
You acknowledge it in. You acknowledged it, and you was okay. You finally gave yourself the okay
permission yes.
to be okay with it. Yeah.
Yes, that's it. That's the critical part of it that I think is often missing in a lot of this work. We do a lot of different modalities and a lot of different, techniques to get at the anger. Oh, wow, I discovered the anger. Oh, wow, I'm upset with this one. I'm upset with that one. Good, but this for a lot of us, it's still, but this, I shouldn't. I'm upset with this one, but I shouldn't be. No, I think the relief, the real relief comes when you discover that it's perfectly okay to have these emotions.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
It reminds me a little bit of one of the members of this group goes by Enjoy on the forum. And one thing that she talks about a lot is internal family systems. When you talk about those emotions, that would be a part of you that has that emotion. There's a part of you that loves your father. There's a part of you that is very, very angry at your father. And one of the things that internal family systems teaches is the idea that you have to learn to love all of those parts and accept all of those parts.
Yes.
Have compassion towards them.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna toss in a question, then maybe we can open it up to everyone. So what does one do? I think what a lot of people want to know is, what is the practice? What do you do on a day-to-day basis while you're healing to get better? What's the recipe?
Yeah, I think I think that's a critical question, and you have to be able, or at least be willing, to go there and quote unquote go there. And so, where's the there that you want to go? It's these recesses, caverns, these dark rooms in your mind that you don't normally think about. And so it's kind of, you have to kind of go on an exploration, on a journey into, this uncharted territory. And that's why it takes a lot, takes a lot of courage to be a TMS patient. I have nothing but admiration. We are truly, brave people who, are willing. That's why so few people, by the way, are willing to take that diagnosis. Because it means that you're going to have to go places, think about things that a huge part of society and our minds doesn't want us to think about. So if the pain, you got to get back to basics, back to Dr. Sarno's basics. And that's why I think I got such a high endorsement from Dr. Sarno. I don't add a lot of stuff to his methodology. I stay very true and pure to his methodology. I go right to basics. And what's the basics? The basic is the pain exists for one for purpose, to distract your attention away from painful emotions. Once you confront the painful emotions, the pain no longer serves a purpose and disappears. So what do you want to do on a day-to-day basis? Confront the painful emotions. How do you do that? Now, there's a lot of, I say, take 15 minutes a day and start writing in a notebook that's between you and you. It's not to be shared with anybody. It's not to be, put on the internet or anything like that. Right. This is just the work that you do. And start writing either about your childhood, memories, your personality, your type of personality that you have, or your life circumstances. And you'll see how one thought leads to another, and you're now exploring things from a different perspective than you've ever looked at these things before. What are the emotions? If you can go back to, and I write about this in my book, a two-step process. What's the emotion? And then what's the emotion about the emotion? So, you may have an emotion, I feel sad. And then the emotion about the emotion is, I'm ashamed for feeling sad. Like that. That's what I would do on a day-to-day basis. And you can do that. What will provoke that kind of thinking is reading and rereading. Like, my book is simple and short, but it's deep. And so you can read it over and over again. And when you hear about somebody else and the journey and the psychological work that someone's done, if it's done with a, enough depth, as I think I've tried to, it'll provoke something in you. And you want to cat as you're hearing about somebody else, with almost without a doubt, something will get sparked in your own mind. So what I would do on a day-to-day basis is read maybe 10 pages of one of Dr. Sarno's books or one of the wonderful books that I've seen, you know, that have been endorsed on the TMS Wiki. You know, read a chapter of that a day. Read 10 books, 10 pages a day. And write for 10 minutes a day. That's the prescription.
But Steve, don't you think you have to loosen up enough to let those emotions start to bubble up? Because I know I went through the divided mind and I did all of Dr. Sarno's journaling and I did all of the journaling and Unlearn Your Pain and all of the stuff in the structured education program. But I don't think I started to get it until I relaxed enough for these emotions to start to come up and rise up without my bidding. I mean, I could understand it all intellectually. You know,
yes.
I could use my
Colour,
mind.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Oh, this is a Bruce MC speaking. I noticed that until I started doing program dream work, things didn't start to bubble up. And I could get it all intellectually. I could do all of the sort of structured Sarno-esque therapies, but I wasn't getting it.
Yep.
It seems like we're such workaholic types, TMSers, that you can take Dr. Sarno's program and do it like a lab manual.
Like
do it in a chem class, but
yes,
you're still
yes.
not getting it. You feel
yes.
like you've done everything and you figured it all out, but you haven't had the primary experience of entering into your unconscious and seeing these things in a visible
yeah.
format. And I think that's what we call, what do we talk about? What do you call that? Resistance. We have
yeah.
very strong resistance to doing this.
Sure. What was your name again, Bruce?
Bruce, yeah, Bruce MC.
Yeah, that's great, Bruce. I love what you said. But here's what I would contribute to that, and not to take anything away from that. I just want to contribute to that, because anything that gets people better, I'm for. And everybody's journey is so unique, Bruce, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some people need to feel the bubbling up, and some people don't. So I don't want to leave people with that you have to have the emotions bubble up, because some people, they do one reading of the book and they're like, I'm good. This is all
I
need.
I don't think there is one way.
Right. But there is one theme that at some point needs to be there, no matter, that cuts across all the different modalities. And that mm-hmm. I think, and it's, you know, my opinion here, at certain point, what allowed for your bubbling up is that somewhere in your consciousness, it became okay to have those feelings.
You allowed it.
And yes. It became, oh, you know what? It's okay for me to feel this grief or rage or whatever it is that your feelings bubbled up, sadness, you know, depths of depression, whatever it is, shame. It was somewhere in your psychology, your psychology said, click, it's okay to feel this. And that,
yeah.
and that's
it's
the click.
Excuse me.
Yeah, that's the key point. It's not whether you actually have the bubbling, and for those of us who need to have the, you know, the flow and all the emotion, great. But I don't want to, you know, good, do it. but I don't want to leave people, oh, I have to have that. What you have to have is the, I don't even want to say acceptance, you know, it's kind of in the right neighborhood, but you have to be just willing to, wow, look at that. Those are some vicious thoughts I'm having right there.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't mean, you know, whoa, look, I really want to do some, you know, there's some.
It sounds like we're getting awfully close to Freud in Totem and Taboo and the incest prohibition when we talk about ambivalent feelings toward our parents.
You know, we're not close. It's zeroed in to Freud. It is pure, one right dead on bullseye. You know, those thoughts are nothing short of primal rage, incestual, savage, you know, and at the same time loving, kind, amorous. You know, it's vicious and it's you know, animalistic.
But that's where you learned all your love responses when you were interacting with your mother and father as a child, as an infant. So it's not surprising that these ambivalent feelings exist in that kind of context.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be a doctrinaire Freudian to notice this. But I'm glad we encountered this. We brought this up. It sounds interesting to me.
Good question. Good question, Bruce. I think Enjoy had a question.
Well, actually, it's more of a comment. I just wanted to say that I don't live in New York or Boston or any of that kind of thing. I live in the wilds of British Columbia, and I do mean the wilds. And I didn't go to see Dr. Sarno, and I didn't get therapy and all that kind of stuff. But what I did do is I went to a 12-step program, and it did exactly what you're talking about for me. It broke through that resistance to feeling the emotions that were resulting in my TMS. And this process started a few years before I ran into Dr. Sarno's books, which was in 1993 when I was suffering from really, really bad back pain.
Mm-hmm.
Thought I was on the verge of having to give up my work and my life, basically. And he said, you know, it could have... it could be your mind trying to keep you from realizing that you subconsciously have some emotions that you're not paying attention to. And I thought, wow, okay, that sounds like me. And within a couple of weeks, the back pain had completely resolved.
That's
great.
A few years
I had fibromyalgia. It was absolutely awful. I thought to myself, and I remember the exact moment, I thought to myself, I bet this is TMS.
Good for you.
Vanished. And the thing is, you know, I think that the people who it happens too quickly, probably a lot of them are going through very similar processes, but they're doing it outside of, you know, they don't even perhaps know about TMS yet, but they're still doing exactly what you're saying, that getting to the place where you can admit to yourself that you're a human being and you have those feelings, or you might have those feelings, and maybe it's time to get that pain to just kind of step aside and let you start thinking about this stuff. And I know a lot of people don't really have to bother having the emotions.
Right.
But those of us who do, it's really interesting how I don't think you have to have all the wonderful resources that you folks have. But what I've been doing lately, as Forrest mentioned before, I um, I've I've been exploring internal family systems, which is it's a self-help thing. It's not that we don't have therapists around here, but I don't know. I just don't like them. So I'm not going to them. I don't feel like it's not for me. I'm the kind of person that does things on my own. So I've been
learning. And Joy, I'm just going to cut you off for just a second, if I may. I just want to contribute something to what you're to people. Is it okay?
Sure, of course.
Because you bring up so many great ideas. Because a lot of people work with therapists, and they do. There's a lot of, or they work different, a lot of different systems to get at emotions. And they do a lot of emotional work, and they end up in the place where, Eric originally asked me, but I've been doing so much work, how come I'm not better? And then not doing any structured work, and bam, you get better. So there's got to be an understanding of a link between the emotional work and the pain. Mm-hmm. And you had a great stroke of insight there where you connected, whatever pain you were feeling before the fibromyalgia, that you got better.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, there's a link here between this emotional work and the pain I was feeling. And then when the fibromyalgia hit you, you still remembered that there was a link. See, there may be a lot of people out in the world doing the emotional work, but unless they're working with a therapist or inside of a system that connects the relationship between the pain and the emotions. See, there's a very, very, very particular relationship between the emotions and the pain. And if that's not really understood, you're not going to be doing Dr. Sarno's work. You'll be doing some other work, and it may get you better, and I have no, I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying you're not doing Dr. Sarno's work.
Well, Steve,
hold on. I want to jump. There's about 17 people on the call, and I want to make sure everyone who has a question does get a chance to ask it or anything like that. Steve, did you want to say anything more in response to?
No, not at all.
Okay, we're
happy,
a little
happy,
bit
oh, more than happy.
Keep going.
Happy to answer any questions, I can even take questions on another event, and I'm happy to keep going. Whatever works for everybody. I don't want to leave people,
Well, thank you. That is much appreciated. So I'm going to do something rather risky. I'm going to simultaneously unmute 16 phone lines. So all 16 of you, here's what I need you to do. If you're on a speakerphone, turn it off fast. You don't want to be on speakerphone. Don't disconnect yourself. But if you're at your computer and you got your speakers turned up, grab a pair of headphones or something. Maybe some of you won't be able to do that. Now, I'll be able to see where the noise is coming from, and I'll be able to mute you. But if everybody could turn off their speakerphone briefly, that would be good. And then we'll just open it up and have a more informal discussion here. So there we go. Okay, so everyone is unmuted. Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, this is Tennis. Thank you, Steve. It's been very interesting. Thanks for coming. And I have a question. You mentioned Freud, or someone did. And do you think maybe a reason the general public isn't buying into this is because Freud has been made out of favor due to some, I guess, negative comments he made about hysteria and penis envy and all that kind of stuff? Would it be better if he was accepted again?
Yeah, no, I don't think that has anything to do with Freud and his personality. I think people don't accept this because we live in a fix-me society. We want to take a pill and, have somebody else help me. We want to go into the surgeon's office and have somebody cut the pain out of me. I don't want to be responsible for my pain. You know, I and if anybody, you know, suggests that I have something to do with it, I'm going to get really upset. You know, I'm going to get outraged and indignant. You know, because how dare you suggest that I may be doing this to myself? And that's all a smoke screen to avoid responsibility. See, I don't want to think that I'm somehow playing a role in creating this pain in my body. I want to say it was, you know, it was an accident. I was lifting concrete. I was twisting my back. I was bending over. It's in my genes. It's genetic. My parents had this. Everybody's had this. But that's all a big, giant smoke screen to avoid me having to deal with, you know, my responsibility with this thing. That's why, you know, in order to get better, Dr. Sarno's system requires a certain responsibility in this and a certain cause that we're causing this at the source of this. And, you know, you get pretty soon, early on, you know, and that doesn't mean it's your fault or that it's, you know, like that. It's not that it's your fault. It's not that you're doing it on purpose. But it does leave, if you could accept that you're doing this somewhere at the source of it, then you can stop. But most people can't get past that I'm doing this, that I have at least something to do with it. You know, my psychology, unconscious, some human mechanism that I'm involved with. See, most people don't want to take that level of responsibility. Most people prefer to, you know, why would, and that plays right into the whole dynamic. It plays right into the whole dynamic of this thing. You know, the psychology of the mind that doesn't want you, you know, is heavily guarded against, you know, it doesn't want you to see. In my case, I didn't want to see the level of rage and anger that I had towards my father, who would do anything for me. My father loves me, and if you met my father, you would love him. He's an incredible, great, amazing immigrant from Italy. I mean, he lived in two countries. He raised a family, put all of us through college. He's an incredible human being. But, you know, I had to face some very uncomfortable feelings that I had about him. Now, most people don't want to face those feelings. And that's why the whole pain, this whole syndrome, that's why there's millions and millions and millions and millions of people suffering from chronic pain, because we think it's wrong to feel those feelings. And so we don't want to enter into system or a treatment program that asks you to look at them. Most people don't want to look at them. Most people would rather take a pill or have some doctor, you know, perform practices on them rather than face those feelings. And that's why 80% of people are unwilling to deal accept this diagnosis, in my opinion.
Now, you have a very, very interesting strategy in your book for connecting pain with emotions, and I've never seen this before mapped out. You call it the treasure map process. Perhaps you can describe that. That's a way to connect your symptoms with the underlying pain or situation that I haven't seen before in anybody's books. It seems to be unique with you.
Great, thanks. And who am I speaking to? Who is this?
Bruce MC.
Oh, hey, Bruce. Yeah, okay, Bruce. I like the treasure map process because a lot of people know, okay, I'm willing to go deep. I'm one of those rare people. I'm one of those 20% that's willing to look at my role, at my emotions. So where do I start digging? You know, that's why I called it the treasure map. So, you know, where do I start digging? And I thought that you could start with any circumstance or situation in your life where there's any kind of upset or discomfort or, you know, any kind of, you know, where things aren't happening the way, you know, there's you know, some kind of, I don't know, upset or discomfort or anger, or things aren't happening the way you want them to happen. And so you first look at the pain and you describe your pain, and then you talk about the facts about what's happening. You start with your circumstances in your life, you know, whatever it is that's bothering you. And you talk about the facts about what's happening there. And then, so you start on a surface level about what's going on in your life. And then you dig down deeper into the feelings that you have about it. And then you dig down deeper at another level about the feelings that you have about those feelings. And then you, accept those feelings, both the feelings that you have about them and the feelings that you have about those feelings. And then when you could kind of get all that, there's a level of that you've faced it, you've explored it, you've dug down, when you can accept that, it's okay to have all that. Then there's something miraculous, startling, unique. I mean, something. If you could just be with all that, you know, rather than so much resistance and fighting and confusion, like, oh, I got all this stuff. I mean, just get it, be with it, and then you could say, then you could start to create some other thoughts about it. It's okay for me to have that. I'm normal. There's nothing wrong with me. I accept myself. I was having deep feelings of, I love myself. I mean, you know, so that's kind of like touches on the main points of the treasure map process.
You say, describe the pain, like my right foot hurts. I feel fine when I'm sitting or lying down, but it hurts every time I put weight on it. It's a sharp pain between the ball of my foot and my heel. However, it doesn't hurt as much in the morning. It hurts more and more as the day goes on. Then you say, pretend your life is a treasure map and scan the terrain of your life and identify a situation or circumstance that is upsetting or bothering you. This will be the X where you start digging.
And yes.
You give the example of a recently ending romantic relationship, and you go deeper and deeper.
Yes.
And so rework the steps. Is that the gist of this treasure map, then?
You can rework the steps in different areas. I mean, yes, there's a relationship that's going on, but then you can look at what's going on at work, and then you could look at what's going on in my family. You want to just, you know, look at as many areas of life where you can, and then, yeah, you can keep going down that same, area. You could rework it that way, or you could, that's why earlier I said if there's an area that you're not ranging far enough into the different areas of life, but also you might not be going deeper. So that's, I think, one of the pretty cool features about the treasure map process.
You keep returning back to different areas on the treasure map that might be bothering you.
You can return back to those areas, or you can expand it. Oh, I didn't realize that there's this, I'm concerned about, let's say you're working with your family and you're working with your health and you're working with your children and you're working with your parents. And then it's like, oh my God, I didn't realize that, you know, for me recently, one of the issues that I didn't realize was bothering me was my retirement. I was like, you know, oh, yeah. I've never had to think about that. I was having fear and anxiety and worry about something that I had not, really been paying attention to. And so I expanded. That's an example of expanding the range. I didn't have to go deeper in that area because I wasn't going in that area at all. It wasn't even on the map. It wasn't on my radar to deal with that part of my life. And I tell you, once you start digging in there, what eventually comes up is thoughts about death and dying and my mortality. You know, how much time do I have I accomplished? What has my life been for? I've wasted my life.
His existential questions.
Kind of thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Zaffirides. Yeah, that's way cool, Steve. Yeah, that's a really important contribution, I think.
Now, that thought right there, I've wasted my life, that's a thought that most people walking around, they'd rather drink a bottle before dealing with that thought.
Yeah, thanks.
Anyone else with a question?
Yeah, I do. It's Jersey, Joan.
Hey, Joan.
As you know, I was a sono patient. Healed the back pain, and I have facial pain. But my question is, and Forrest, I've asked you this, I'm sure. Do you really have to find out that underlying emotion?
No, you do not.
So as you say, dig deeper and deeper, you may never know what that is. True?
Absolutely. Absolutely true.
All right. So with that being said, for me, doing the work and not feeling better, what would you suggest that, I don't know, to dig deeper is, I don't understand it.
That's perfect. That's perfect. It's perfect what you're saying. What's your name again, ma'am?
Joan.
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 I really appreciate your question and trust and where you're at, Joan. I mean, I could feel your, you know, the just the struggle, you know, the almost the hopelessness and despair. So thank you for putting it out there and asking me that. See, the whole point, and that's a good pitfall that you pointed out, the point of the treasure map process is not to find the treasure, to find that, you know, like in the Hollywood movies, oh, that thing that happened when I was 2 and my,
right,
you know, brother stole my fire truck.
Right.
The point is of the digging is to be okay with the digging. It's not to find something in the end. It's to be okay. The point of doing all that digging around all those emotions and playing and thinking about all those emotions is not, because it's a bottomless pit, that
right,
psyche that, you know, Freud was talking about. It's bottomless. So the point is to be, the more you do it, the more you become okay. The point of it is to become okay with the things that you discover, Joan.
Okay.
That's so far, I mean, to me, it's still, there's still a part of you. If you're still experiencing pain, there's still a part of you that thinks that some of those emotions, it's not okay to have. So
right,
the point is, hold on, the point is not to discover that emotion. The point is, because some people never do. They read the book once and they're like, oh, they're like, oh, fine, I have horrible emotions. That's what's been causing the pain this time. I don't need to know what they are. I just, oh, that's what's causing the pain. You know what? I'm all right with having those emotions. And the pain disappears. The key is to become all right with, some of us need to, you know, go down there. But that's why I said earlier, everyone's got a different path, a different journey.
Right.
But at some point, all of us need to become, oh, hey, it's all right for me to you know, there's nothing physically wrong with me. And all I need to do is accept and face and confront those. I have to confront and face those emotions.
Now is recognizing that on an intellectual basis enough, or does it have to somehow be deeper than that, the way that you accept that you have these emotions and embrace those emotions?
Say that again, Forrest.
Now, is accepting and embracing those emotions on an intellectual level enough, or do you need to, on some sort of a deeper emotional level, embrace the fact that you have these emotions? Or is it just intellectual emotions, acceptance, is that enough? How do you know when you've done that? Because I bet a bunch of people are going to listen to this and they're going to say, hey, I totally get it. I'm okay with being angry at my father. I'm okay at being angry at my mother or my child or whoever. I recognize that that's perfectly okay. You know, I get that. But I know I'm not done yet because I still have these symptoms.
Yeah. Yeah, that would point to me of a not okayness with that.
Mm-hmm. So how do you know? Like how do you get from that superficial knowing to a deeper knowing, or a deeper acceptance rather than the superficial acceptance?
I think that happens. I think, you know, that's when Dr. Sarno would say that's when you need to call in the Marines. And what he meant by that is that you work with a professional.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, and a professional psychotherapist who's trained, not just any psychotherapist, but somebody who's trained in this very particular relationship between emotions and pain, who guides you down this road and journey into those areas, and eventually lets you know, you know, you're either eventually gets to the point of letting you know that you're okay for having, and not just like an intellectual thought, it's an emotional okayness with being the full range of human emotions. And that's where, you know, if this is a critical point, I think, because so many of us try to do this and we hit this impasse in our own thinking, you know, in our own minds, we're in our own heads. And I think that's the value of your community, Forrest. The priceless value of this community, where we can speak to each other and share with each other. There's so much beauty and compassion and healing that's possible when you realize that you're not alone and you're not unique. Mm-hmm. You know, that will certainly open up that possible shift that goes from an intellectual understanding to an emotional understanding. That's why these books are so valuable. You know, you can, whether it's mine or another one, you get all these different, I say read them all, you know. it's so important to know that you're not alone. But not just to commiserate, because it's not enough. Not enough. That's not the point. The point is so that we could all have this accepted, where that's why when you work in a structured environment, it keeps you from the pitfall of circling around the emotion rather than this, I keep coming back to the relationship between the emotion and the pain. That the pain serves to distract your attention away from these emotions.
Right, right. Core idea and so crucial. Yeah.
Thank you.
I hope that helped, Joan.
Yes, thank you very much.
Very welcome. Hey, Forrest, you know what I'm thinking is I can continue to go on and on, but maybe we give people an opportunity to take this and digest it, and I'll come back to answer more questions at another occasion.
I think that sounds like a wonderful idea. We would really love to have you back. That would be great. So shall we do that? Shall we take a little a rain check and give people a chance to get your book, take a look through it, read some of those themes? Because I think what everyone here is interested in is how does this apply to their own life? Read some of those things and think about that, and then we'll schedule another of these in a couple months.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, you know, the it's the kind of thing you want to. It doesn't all happen all. You don't want to. You want to. I guess I've heard the expression: you eat an elephant by one bite at a time.
indeed.
Steve, this is Bruce MC. I might add that your book is now available in a Kindle version for Mac. And I just downloaded that today, so I've been reading along as you've been explaining, and it's not too expensive either.
Good.
Pretty darn cheap. So.
Good. Yeah. Good. I'm glad. Thanks for letting.
Well, yeah. Steve, this is Eric. If you ask me, you've added a lot of fresh understanding to a whole team of people here. That's, you know, been digging deep, been looking at their treasure maps and stuff, but you've laid out an understanding so they can expand their knowledge further. You've laid out something that they can dig further, whether it be linear or nonlinear, so they can understand better. You said it in ways that us other guys haven't said it, so, you know, it can open your ears, you know. So we really appreciate what you've done, buddy.
You're so welcome. It's my privilege to do this. I mean, it's the least that I could do. I was given a great gift by Dr. Sarno, I want to continue to extend it out to, you know, millions of people that are suffering from chronic pain and, you know, are being not really looking at, you know, don't even know that there's a way to get better that doesn't involve surgery or drugs.
Wow.
Yeah, I have to say, when you said that the turning point was when you heard someone else's story, and that's what made you want to start the alumni panels and write your book, I could totally relate to that, because the turning point to me was reading those success stories online, and that's what made me want to create the TMS Wiki as a way to empower people to share their own stories. That's pretty much what we're about.
So, you're getting your job done for us. Thank you for doing this.
Well, I think the show has really hit home, and you know, everybody on here just needs to take this and listen to it over and over and over again and really let it sink in what Steve Canana has been telling us. Go out and buy his book. Use your mind to heal your body. It's basically brand new. So, and I've been reading it. It's a great book. This is Eric again. We're going to end it on that. I mean, this has been an awesome show, man. Gosh, you just keep coming out with, you know, more and more what we need to know. And again, thank you, Steve, for all your help, and everybody that showed up too. Forrest, Bruce, Tom, everybody, enjoy. All the ladies. We have got a lot of people that want to ask you questions, Steve. So you coming back?
I'll come back sooner than a few months if you want. I'm available, guys. I'll speak to you soon. Good night, everybody.
Okay, good night.
Good night. Thank you.